Hey everyone, before we get started, just want to do a quick reminder that you can sign up for a free trial of our projection system over at dfsr.com/MLB. That'll get you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. You can go over to our chat room and just ask some of our users how they enjoy the service. They'll give you their honest answer, and we wouldn't point you over there if we didn't know they weren't happy with it. So dfsr.com/MLB, and you're all set. And once again, a quick ask to go over to iTunes and just rate and review us over there. It really helps to boost us up the iTunes charts to have reviews over there. So go over to iTunes, rate and review the podcast. It really helps us out a lot. We appreciate it. All right, let's get on to some Friday baseball. All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, June 30th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And buddy, should we ever again, even not even we were totally doing it, but should we be doubting that Clayton Kershaw is not just back to, I don't know, vintage Clayton Kershaw form at this point?
No, not at this point in time. Last night, obviously, just goes out, carries our lineups on his hefty and well-considered shoulders to the promised land. He's just a kind of a god tier pitcher still, and we're not breaking any new ground, but yeah, at least in the meantime, we just haven't seen a pitcher perform like this since Pedro Martinez did it for like 2 years, and Kershaw's been doing it for 10. So yeah, he's number one on my book.
We'll get into today's games, but one moment, I was watching him pitch last night, and he's awesome to watch pitch too, because no other pitcher, he's like so good that like he's like allowed to just get super frustrated himself when he just like, I don't know, commits the mortal sin of throwing a ball when he didn't want to, you know? So like he'll like be have an 0-2 count and they'll just try to get someone away with the curveball and it just lands in the dirt and he'll just like, he just like almost did like a primal scream at himself. And it was like, you know, just to get himself into like a 2-2 count instead of a 1-2 count. But it's like for him, it's like, it's almost like he's allowed to do it because the control is so pinpoint. It's like, I'm trying to think. It's like, you know, like when you have a layup shot in pool and it's just like all you have to do is just tap it in. It's like sort of seems that easy for him. Like you're allowed to just be super mad at yourself when it doesn't happen. That's kind of how it feels like when he just like misses his spot. I don't know. Kind of, for me, it's like, I don't know. A lot of these guys seem robotic. He doesn't seem that way. I mean, he seems robotic in a lot of ways, but this one specific way, he seems like, I don't know, more human. I don't know. Anyway, just had fun watching Kershaw pitch last night. We have a pretty big slate. Well, we have a full slate of games today with some interesting pitching going. No one in the, obviously in the Kershaw level, because there really is no one else in that level, but there are guys that I think we can probably spend some time considering here, pluses and minuses for each of them, just kind of based on, you know, price and matchup and whatever. But if we were to start looking, let's say on FanDuel, because we're only able to roster one pitcher there, is there a guy that stands out to you as like sort of like the clear cash game play? I'm gonna put the group of like top tier pitchers here as DeGrom, Wood, McCullers, and Robbie Ray. And then there's kind of a drop off after that in terms of just like price and safety.
What if I told you, Doug, that last night we got to play the league leader in wins, third in the majors in ERA. Tonight we have the opportunity to play the guy who's second place in the majors in wins and second in ERA. Would that interest you very much?
Is it Irvin Santana?
That's Jason Vargas, dude.
Oh, I know Santana's got to be close. I was actually scrolling down the list.
Well, Santana is close. He's 6th and 6th when it comes to ERA and wins. So
yeah. So the run hot all stars are pitching. No, I do not want to consider those two guys because that is the absolute definition of smoke.
I
got to
make new notes. You talk for a while. I'll come up with my own.
That's who you're going to leave with, just like a little hot Jason Vargas talk. No, like I said, DeGrom, Wood, McCullers, Ray sort of stand out to me as the high upside, sort of getting close to ace level pitchers. Do one of those guys stand out to you as a clear cut play on FanDuel? Is going to be sort of, I don't know, we're going to jockey through some things around here? Like, who kind of jumps out to you?
Well, yeah, so I think first and foremost, that is the very clear number one group. And it's a pretty exciting top group. And actually on DraftKings as well, where you can play two of those guys. So from a pitching perspective, there's a lot of depth tonight. Now, this, for our actual profitability purposes, so let's compare it to last night, right? Like, I don't know if it was this clear cut for you, but there are nights where if you don't play the top guy, well, like Kluber the other day, right? Kluber was a 50% start on a 3-game slate. And for us, it felt like 50% of the people were just paying the rake. However it worked out, that those 50% of the people were giving themselves a really bad chance at actually winning and cashing in that contest. Tonight, with four pitchers that are at least considerable, there's going to be less people who are just in there on complete dead money, right? And so from that perspective, from our actual profitability perspective, I'm not sure it actually helps to have more depth. Like in some ways, it being a top-heavy night helps a little bit more. But in terms of just being able to find a safe pitcher at whatever price tier you want, so you can fit in the bats that are the most appropriate values, I think it is pretty exciting from that perspective. I will say that from where I sit, I do personally have DeGrom, Wood, and McCullers as a slight cut above Ray, but I don't know. Like, do you understand why I would make that distinction?
Yeah, definitely. Ray walks too many guys. The ballpark doesn't help him here either. So those probably has those two things working against him. It would be the walk rate that would probably put him.
The next cut
above, or like if, for the same price, I would much rather play McCullers. Although I have a concern about McCullers, which we can get into in a second. But I probably would put him. If those guys were the class one, then he would be a 1A group.
Yeah, sure. I think 1A is fair. I mean, with Ray this season, he's running very hot on left on base percentage. He's at 84%. Now, some people will look at that and say, well, hey, if you strike out 11 guys per nine, then you're going to leave more guys on base. And while that might be true, last season he only left 69% of the guys he put on base, right? So it's like the truth is probably somewhere slightly in the middle. I do think he ran badly from that perspective last year, but I actually think in his case, like the 3.8 xFIP is about what his true talent level is, and that's good, especially if you're going to attack 11 Ks per nine on top of it. It's just that tonight we have some really, really elite level options, and for at least for my cash game purposes, I think Ray presents as much upside as anyone here. But for my cash game purposes, I just don't know if that's where I hope to land at this point.
No, I'm with you. So of that initial three, then the McCullers, Wood, and DeGrom group, who stands out to you from that group then?
Yeah, it's a little closer there, and I'm not sure as of this recording at 9:30 on Friday that I can give you a clear-cut answer. But I will say that on FanDuel, at least, I do think that McCullers is priced cheaply enough at 9,500, and I just kind of view him. I mean, I know that the name isn't there as much as DeGrom, especially, and I know Wood has been really hot this season, but I just feel like that extra 1,000 really affords me the opportunity to pay down at some other slots. I will say, though, that Wood, like if I was just going strictly for safety and that's all I was sorting for, and I, you know, especially when it comes to matchup and park, Wood probably actually does jump to the front of the line for me.
Yeah, here's my concern with McCullers. He's coming off, he was injured, he was sad, he was in the 15-day DL, and I actually don't remember exactly what the reason, I'll look that up. But regardless, he was on the 15-day DL, came back last game against Seattle and threw 76 pitches, right? And that's actually my only concern. So he was
in
the
90... Awesome.
No, he was awesome, for sure. It's not that. It's not that he's not awesome. But before that...
I say he's awesome. I know you don't like him, but I'm...
Okay, enough. It's just a pitch count thing. It's like what we talked about with Maeda the other day, where guys like Ryu, or guys like this, like... the pitch count thing really matters. And so if there's a specific reason the pitch count is low, and the specific reason was you haven't pitched in 2 weeks, really, and we just don't want to have you throw 100 pitches, it makes sense to be cautious about how long he's going to go into the game. So like he would need, I don't know, something along the ways of a 20% jump in pitches this game to get to like 90 pitches, right? Like that's a pretty big jump. And like 25% to get like to 95 somewhere in there. I'm making that math up a little, but like that's a lot to kind of hope on as an organization that, and by the way, the Astros are a really smart organization about this stuff. Like they're not like the Giants or the Nationals, I guess, are getting smart. But like some of these teams are just like totally clueless when it comes to just like, you know, have old school managers that just be like, have them throw 110 like we did in our days. Like these teams don't do this anymore, right? And so if he only threw seven, like how much does that worry you? 76 pitches is just not a lot. Yes, you can be really good on 76, but I'm just worried that he gets to 85 and he's pulled again, and now we're paying a decent price for a guy who's going to pitch 15% less than we normally would expect him to.
It worries me for sure. And it was a back issue that he went on the DL with. Back issues are kind of funny because teams tend to want to protect guys with arm issues. That's what most people get worried about. But back issues are a lot worse than, say, if this was like a little bit of a hip thing or a leg thing. Like that's the type of thing that can act up. It can cause problems for you, you know, throughout the season, even long into your career, if you don't get it taken care of. And when your back is like sore, if anyone has had a sore back out there, I can speak from experience here. It doesn't take much to like tweak it a little bit. And then he's just back on the DL. He's so important to the Astros plan right now that I suspect they will be cautious with him. So I think it is absolutely worthwhile to put that out. And frankly, it was off my radar initially. So yeah, I think that probably, like if all these guys are really close to Grom, Wood, and McCullers, then that might be the straw that broke the camel's back there.
Good one. And conversely, Alex Wood, who we'd had some of those issues, those concerns with before, where he wasn't throwing more than 90 pitches, he went out and threw 100 last game, or 98, right? And so that's actually, if you think that's going to be sort of where they end up landing with him, like that was maybe the goal, was to just stretch him out to get up to that like around 100 pitch kind of plateau, which I mean, that's kind of like industry standard sort of pitch count. Yeah. I don't know if it's like scientifically backed up, but you know, teams seem to, most discussion kind of centers around that like kind of base 100 pitch. But I don't know, him getting to 98 pitches, you know, he went 6 innings, 7 Ks. At that point, they're not priced the same for sure, so there's a little difference there. Like Wood is 1,000 more than McCullers on FanDuel, and he's a little bit more on DraftKings as well. I mean, do you think that we could like possibly? Because I know we had lowered Wood a little bit, wondering like if we could really trust just how long he was going to be out there. Like, do you think we can bring him back to like sort of our initial assumptions about how long he was going to go into games?
I do think that we can do that. You know, Wood was a guy, he started the season and it wasn't even clear that the Dodgers had a plan to have him in the starting rotation. His first game was as a reliever, then he got blown up by the Cubs. And since then, he's just been an ace, like almost like an ace's ace too. Like just sub 2 ERA, that's not actually that far off his xFIP of 2.5. And he's still not priced anywhere near like that top tier level stud. And the Padres, like in terms of just looking for the most forgiving possible matchup to try to pitch deep into games, the Padres are exactly that, right? Like the absolute dead last in the league, a full 11 WOBA points behind the second to last team, top three team in terms of striking out versus lefties. Like if you had to draw up the perfect matchup on paper to try to get a guy to pitch deeper into games than usual, this would be it. And so while oftentimes I think we prefer to be a day late rather than a day early when a guy's going to come off his pitch count restrictions, I do feel like with Wood, given that he touched 100 pitches the last time around, this would be the time to buy low on him. Because the thing is, if he goes out there and throws 107 pitches and is amazing in this start, I think we could pay a full 10% more for him the next time around. So yeah, as of right now, I think he is leading the clubhouse for me in terms of guys I'd like to see in my cash game lineups.
Yeah, the problem there on DraftKings is he's really expensive. It's more of a discussion for me on FanDuel. Yeah. There are $1,000 difference there. And look, 1,000 is a lot in a FanDuel lineup, don't get me wrong. But also, Wood's overall price of 10.5 just isn't a ton. So like, you're not making huge sacrifices just right out of the gate. So like, there the extra $1,000 still means the same, but for some reason, I feel like it means less. If that it makes sense,
because you're not like Wood are separated by 3,000 on DraftKings, right? And that's like a pretty considerable difference.
Well, McCullers' price on DraftKings, I'm totally fine going there, even if I knew he was going to get
like... That is my point. McCullers is 700 less expensive and Wood is 1200 more expensive on DraftKings. So the spread between their two prices is 3000. At that point, we're not exactly splitting hairs. Like, that's a whole another good player that you can play in your lineup. Like, that's like Logan Forsythe's price, right? Like, you have to take that in a very, very strong consideration there.
And here's where, and this is why I like playing multiple sites, because you can take advantage of the differences in pricing. We've said this a lot about why, like, this is the way you hedge, not just like make a bunch of like, let's say, cash game lineups where you're like, well, I gotta have a little Alex Wood, I gotta have a little McCullers. Like, you don't really need to do that, and that's not really necessarily a good strategy if like the decisions aren't, if the decisions are spread pretty far. Like, you know, if the point expectation for a lineup, like if that extra $1,000 you were gonna spend on Wood was gonna get you, I don't know, two or three less points in expectation on your bats, then it's just not worth it, right? Like, that's a pretty big downgrade. But in terms of, but that's fine, because you just go over and get, you'll go over and play McCullers pretty safely at 8,800, where he's frankly probably just mispriced over on DraftKings. So like there you can stomach like an 85 to 90 pitch performance and not feel too bad about it. And look, the Yankees aren't a great matchup here. So the American League to National League thing does matter. Yankees have a pretty strong top of the lineup. The Padres are one of these teams where, you know, for Wood, they're a great matchup. They have a concentration of talent, like sort of right in the middle, where the Margot, Myers, Renfro group is like not the easiest group ever to get through. But the thing is, what's sandwiched around them is absolutely horrible. And so like, you can kind of just live with it. Like, yeah, they're actually one of those teams that, you know, like last night, this kind of work could have worked out for you. And actually, Chris Durrell, who does great baseball work, had been like pounding this idea into people's heads in the chat room early. I know I'm going way off the rails here because we were talking about pitchers, but he was talking about, you know, there are times where if a team's implied runs are like, let's say 4.5, which is like around where the Padres were, it's a good chance that those 4.5 are going to come from like that group of three. Like, you don't need to do a full Padre stack. Like, this is, you just stack these three guys exactly that can actually do real damage against them, and then like just kind of leave the rest of the team out, because like that's where all their runs are actually coming from. Whereas like a team like the Red Sox, it's going to kind of come from up and down the lineup, let's say, or like the Astros are a better example. Like, it's going to come from up and down the lineup. So all this to being said, Wood, I think, has some trouble probably with those three guys, and then should just absolutely roll through the rest of the lineup. Now, we haven't even actually mentioned DeGrom. So, and DeGrom actually might be having, well, Wood's been having a pretty damn good season, but DeGrom himself is having a great season too. He's pitching against Philly. Is the price thing worrying you there? He's 12-1 on FanDuel, which is 1,600 more than the next closest guy in Wood, and he's 12-5 on DraftKings, which is, it goes a little down to Wood because they've adjusted his price for the matchup against the Padres, and then there's pretty a huge dip after that. Most of the guys are around 10,000. Is that price on DeGrom just kind of getting too expensive, and that's like maybe why we didn't start with him, or was just kind of he just got left off because we just started in a different place?
No, I think it's just because we got started in a different place. I mean, really, it's an embarrassment of riches tonight at the starting pitcher position. Like, DeGrom, first and foremost, is just still an excellent pitcher. I know that the numbers are a little bit off what they were last year in some ways, just in that they're, and by off, I just mean different, and that makes it hard to analyze. So, you know, he's added almost 2 Ks per nine and made a huge jump over even his 2015 season. He's basically added another K per nine over his best season ever. The problem is the walks have jumped considerably too. If you want to compare him to that, I'm sorry, the 2015 season, he's almost doubled his walk rate, and the home run rate has gone up considerably as well. And that looks more like noise than actual stats. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. But the Phillies are an elite level matchup too. You know, top five team in terms of strikeouts versus righties, bottom four team in terms of WOBA versus righties. So this is really like about as good a spot as you can hope to get a starting pitcher. It's just that when you take all the factors together, and this is what makes daily fantasy baseball so complicated, it's not just the pitcher, it's not just the matchup, it's not just the specific guys that show up in the lineup, it's also the price, and it's the park, and when you add it all together, our system still likes DeGrom. I could see him even winding up in the overall top lineup if we get a bunch of cheap bats to support it, but right now, he's just slightly worse value than Woody McCullers on a strict points per dollar basis, and I really think that's the only thing holding him back here. They're all excellent. They're all tightly clustered within about 4 fantasy points of one another. It's just that he's the most expensive one of the group, and on a night like tonight, that might matter.
He's a minus 250 favorite right now against the Phillies. Started at minus 230, bet up to minus 250. Over-under went up too, but that was mostly coming up on the Mets side, not on the Philly side. Whereas Wood is minus 215 with a 7.5 over. So right around the same implied runs, Mets a few more, but DeGrom gets a few more of those win expectation points. Probably between those two things, I'd probably just end up going Wood for a little cheaper, shaving off a few win expectation points, but you know, not enough to make a huge difference, and just know that he has just the better matchup of the two. It's going to be really close. The pricing, it really actually just all boils down to pricing here. Like, right? Like, mm-hmm. the pricing is just different enough on those four guys that it actually makes the decision hard. If any one of these guys, it's funny, if just like one less existed, then you almost like, you kind of started the podcast at the top by saying this, like, this is where this depth, it kind of doesn't do you any favors because you almost can't help but make it a good decision here. Like, and that's usually what we're looking for, is like people to make bad decisions. You mentioned the Kluber decision yesterday, which we were floored by. That was like in the afternoon slate yesterday. You know, people went Brad Peacock and Michael Fulmer in cash games, who actually both pitched well. Fulmer particularly was excellent. But and so people kind of got there anyway, but that struck me more as just luck than it would
better,
be.
That's the old better to be lucky than good category for me. Right. Like, I'm not going to pat anyone in the back for playing Michael Fulmer and getting home run yesterday.
No, me neither. What I'm saying is this situation is different. Like, this is actually, I mean, maybe this is us being like dead actor, like know-it-alls or whatever, but they just, the situation just strikes me as different because I do think these decisions are closer. It's going to be hard.
This is the case for playing multiple slates too. Like, you can play, for instance, if you play the late slate, like if you play the 10:05 slate, then you can just play Alex Wood and anyone who plays these other guys. I don't know, maybe make a case for Sonny Gray or something as a fringe guy you can play, but I think you get a huge edge there. Then you play the early slate, and all of a sudden, Robbie Ray and Sonny Gray and Alex Wood are off the table, and now there's a lot more room for error there. So, you know, just try to pick and choose your slates here because there might be more edge than simply just playing the main slate and plugging in the best guy.
I'm still a proponent. I still don't understand why the sites don't do it, but why they don't do an early only slate, like for set, like 7 o'clock only games, right?
I swear to God, because they just never thought about it. I think that they just do all the other ones, and it just simply hasn't come up in the office because it's so obvious and straightforward that you would want to do that. I think probably if you asked, like, I think probably half the people in the FanDuel offices think that there is a 7 o'clock only slate. Like, I bet if you went there and polled them, I swear, I'm not joking. I'm being 100% serious. Because it's just one of those things where, like, if you work for FanDuel, how many people in the FanDuel offices are actually cruising around the FanDuel lobby seeing what contests are there?
Oh, two not guys? Many.
That's what I mean. So like,
well, more than two, but more than two, but less than you would think. Like there would be, there's that. I mean, the company's huge. There's less than you, way less than you would think.
I bet that there are fewer than five people that work at FanDuel that are actively in the FanDuel.com because they can't play, right? So there's somebody who updates the slates or whatever, and that probably happens in an automated fashion. And they go in there, they make sure nothing's broken, and if no one complains, they don't go in. This is like obviously just totally not useful to the listener, and like total conspiracy stuff, but. I'm
also just not sure it's correct. I'm going to go on record by saying I don't believe that to be correct. But like the
we can disagree. The people like when we disagree on the podcast about completely esoteric things that made no difference in their life. So this is good stuff.
Anyway, back to the thing. I just wish they would do a 7 o'clock only slate because that's where a majority of the games usually end up, and like that is where you could even take more advantage of these sort of pricing differences because then you could just. You could kind of like have your cake and eat it too. You could have all these pitchers and you could be getting money in good without having to worry. It just makes sense too from a lineup point of view. Like just have, you know, you have all the information there. Anyway, I'm going to send them an email today. Ask them if they ever consider it. Actually, I'll talk to my boys at DraftKings on Monday. I'm going to go meet up with some of those guys. So maybe I'll throw that idea out there and understand why it has never happened. So it's just a brag, Betty. I'm not even trying to be humble.
Because you weren't bragging like, by the way, I'm a VIP at DraftKings, so I get to go invited to do cool stuff. Just letting you guys know because how awesome I am. You just kind of tried to slip it in there. Like, it's just like a matter of course. So I would say it's a pretty obvious humble brag. That's okay.
I'll talk a little bit more about it on Tuesday's podcast after I get – that was when I fully planned the brag about it. Okay, let's do so you mentioned Sonny Gray. There are a couple tournament considerations here. I think Robbie Ray falls into that camp because, like we said at the beginning, his strikeout upside is as good as anybody else is really going here. The walk side, his walk upside or downside or whatever you want to look at that is as good as even the worst pitcher on the slate too. So that can – you know, he ran into the problems with that against Philly the other day. He is susceptible to just – if he has an umpire with a small strike zone or the off-speed stuff is sort of missing out of the zone, he's in real trouble. So that's where you were correct by saying he falls below that other group. You know, other guys like Sonny Gray, Michael Pineda, I mean, Cueto to some degree, but not really. I mean, either of those guys.
I have a big diamond in the rough for you, Doug. You ready for a big diamond in the rough?
I am.
One, Jacob Faria. So Vegas hates Jacob Faria today. Let's get that out of the way. They think that he's just going to get trashed by the Orioles, but I'm actually not so sure. So he's not really a name that was on my radar very much. And in fact, I specifically looked him up to do a deeper dive on him because I wanted to recommend the Orioles as a stack. And I still might just do just that. But if you look at his track record, it paints a picture of a guy who's had some pretty elite strikeout stuff at different spots in the minors. Like, you know, a rookie ball, he was completely dominant. He kind of fluctuated around where I think the only explanation I have is that they were experimenting with different pitches because he went from 7.5 Ks per nine in A ball to 11.5 in double A, maintained that at 10. This season, 13 Ks per nine in triple A in 11 starts. And this season through four starts in the majors, he's averaging better than 6 innings a start, 10 Ks per nine and fewer than 2 walks per nine. And so those are incredibly good stats. That those stats rate in the same range as all the ace level guys we've recommended. The difference is Faria is absurdly cheap. You know, like he's a really, really, I guess he's more expensive than I thought. The difference is that he's absurdly unknown. People don't know who Jacob Faria is, and you can get very, very good upside here. And I'm going to say something like 0% ownership. So just a guy to think about. Yeah, as I'm looking at the prices, maybe he's more expensive than is worth the risk, certainly not for cash games. But if you just want to play a guy who's going to have 0% ownership that actually does have the potential to have the best game on the slate, he's definitely someone to take a look at.
See, at that point, I think, I mean, price matters for sure, but it kind of, in this case, it almost helps him if your goal is to get, you know, intense separation. Yeah, if your goal is to get complete separation, because like if DraftKings had posted him at like 6,700, then I think more people would be sort of on the train of just like upside at a really cheap price, or same with FanDuel, right? But the fact that he's priced in the same group as guys like Pineda or Gray or, you know, Cueto to some degree, when Marco Estrada even, although that's against Boston, the fact that he's in that same group means your eyes are going to go completely over him, right?
Exactly. Like and there's so many things like pushing this projection that are going to be things. So this is a good lesson. Let's sit down. You can play the musical drop where I learn you guys a little PSA about picking pitchers for big tournaments, right? So one of the first things that's going to be pushing down Jacob Faria's projection in most systems is the fact that he's barely a favorite over Baltimore. So given that he's so low rated here, with just a minus 118 money line, basically no one, including us, is going to give him credit for the win. But the reality is, any pitcher can get a win on a given night. And if he goes out there and out pitches the terrible Dylan Bundy, my friends, he will get a win. And then he'll get all those points. All right, that's enough. That's so distracting.
I don't know how to turn it off. I just learned about that new feature. I just learned about that new feature yesterday in the module that we use to record the podcast, and that was the perfect way to use it.
That was great. But so there's that. There's the win, and then there's other stuff like, you know, the other team scoring a lot of runs. Sure, like maybe on average they're gonna, but Baltimore also kind of strikes out a lot. Like they could just go out there and be bad. They're the top eight team in the majors in terms of striking out versus righty. So like some certain things come together, and it's not out of the question to imagine that Faria is the best performing points per dollar pitcher on the slate. And that is not something I would have thought I could say about him going into the season, but I think it's true. And yeah, in terms of it's not likely, but possible, just worth considering for sure.
For sure. And I think this just adds to, there's a lot to consider here with pitching tonight. I do think for tournaments, there's just so many different ways you can go. We didn't even mention some of the guys. I mean, we didn't even, like I said, guys like Pineda even have huge strikeout kind of upside. Sonny Gray's been pretty decent this year. John Gray's coming back off the DL to face Arizona. Not a great matchup, but he does have some real stuff. So a bunch of different ways to go. Going to be an interesting slate for sure. I do think the biggest questions are going to revolve around, for at least for the pitching, are going to be revolving around what the ownership percentages look like among that top group that we saw today. This is where, you know, I like to, it's good to go around and read the rest of the industry takes and just see like sort of where some other people are landing. I mean, our system's going to land on where it lands kind of no matter what, but you'll get a sense of where some of that ownership is going to be. We're going to hit some stacks here in a second. Hit us up with a sponsor before we do that. And tell us about a sponsor.
Sure. Let's talk about fantasyfactor.com. So Fantasy Factor is a great site for people who want to get into DFS but don't want to play against sharks putting in 100 lineups at a time. They offer smaller salary-based contests just like you're used to on FanDuel and DraftKings, and they just run a good ship over there. The software is very clean. The user interface is great. And like I mentioned, the games are softer. The average site isn't going to have a lineup optimizer for Fantasy Factor. The average articles aren't going to be about great plays there. So if you're relatively new to DFS or if you're just someone who's skilled but doesn't put in a ton of money each night, consider fantasyfactor.com. If you use promo code DFSR, you can get a $5 entry ticket. Just go put it to use. You don't have to wait for it to drip out or anything like that. And then you can get going. So fantasyfactor.com, promo code DFSR, and we'll see you over there.
All right. We are going to have to pay some for pitching, though. Probably not totally breaking the bank unless we go DeGrom and then maybe some other expensive pitcher like Wood. Like, so I think you're going to have a chance to play some at least name bats. That was kind of in question last night before we were able to get our boys Jesus Aguilar and Jonathan VR into cash game lineups where four home runs combined. That was a nice way to do it, but I don't think you're going to need to go that route tonight unless you play DeGrom, and even then. So where can we start with cash games here? Or is there a team that jumps out to you? I know it looked like from when I ran some initial sort of just queries on optimal lineups here, it did look like there was a spread between a bunch of different teams. So I'm not sure if there's one team that's kind of crawling to the surface for you.
Yeah, I mean, so as deep as pitching is tonight, I think hitting is almost equally deep just because there are – like, it's just basically there's this line in the sand, and after you get past the reasonable pitchers, you get down into the deep dregs almost instantaneously. So there's a lot of different teams to choose from here. I mentioned the Dylan Bundy's pitching tonight. Always worth mentioning when he's going because he's just getting harassed by opposing hitters this year. The Rays are kind of, you know, they're not a conventional stack team by any stretch just because they strike out all the time. But they have a sneaky high WOBA. I think a lot of people picture them as, you know, shooting fish in a barrel when you're a pitcher going against them. But the high strikeout rate really hasn't depressed their ability to put up numbers against righties. They have a 340 WOBA against righties this season. And given that Dylan Bundy's sporting that XFIP over 5 and has never really put that, the great stuff, the promising career from the minors, has never really put that together in any earnest way in the major leagues, I think they're an interesting place to begin.
No, I'm with you. They have some lefty bats that can do damage there. Dickerson at the top of the lineup. Malik Smith should be hitting leadoff tonight. Logan Morrison. So there's some guys that can give Bundy real problems here. The over-under for them, they have, I think, the highest implied total. Yeah, they're creeping right up towards 6 right now, which for the Rays, man, I can go back and look at this probably pretty quickly, but I believe that's going to be their highest over-under of the season, or their highest implied run.
What you pointed out, I think, is key here, too, is that three of the four lefties that they'll probably play will be batting in those first four slots in the lineups in all likelihood tonight. So the fact, you know, we often talk about how you don't want to take just the total implied run total to figure out, because basically the way this works is the deeper your team is, the less you actually want to play guys from that team, because the runs are going to be spread out across multiple positions. But if you take a team like the Rays, where, you know, they have Smith, Dickerson, Longoria, Morrison, and then, you know, Suze is fine, but that's more of a guy who you want to play against lefties, then there's a pretty dramatic drop-off after that. That's actually great for our DFS purposes, because that means you can just play the top four guys in the lineup and feel pretty good about it. So, yeah, I think they're... And I think they'll actually be relatively under-owned tonight, even though they have a high Vegas implied total, just because the names are not ones that necessarily jump off the DFS page.
No, yeah, I'm with you. And like I said, I'm going to go back and look, but I believe this is going to be about as high as a run line as you're going to see for their team. You know, I was just looking here, and I think there's some confusion here of who's starting. I know Dylan Bundy was the listed starter going into last night and even this morning. I guess Tillman was on the paternity leave list. And so it looks like it's going to be Chris Tillman and not Bundy. Yeah. Although
yeah, he's listed, but it's different on different sites. Like FanDuel has Bundy right now, but you're right, ESPN has Tillman. And
yeah,
World
I think
is actually confirming that now Tillman is on track to make the start. So, yeah,
but there's, I think it's, well, here's the thing. Good news for everybody. They both stink. So,
everything like, I said about Bundy, it goes for Tillman as well. So
it actually does. It is very rare for a situation like that to like kind of like creep its head into there and be like, well, it was supposed, it was supposed to be player X, but it's actually player Y. Like it was
worse than Bundy, like considerably worse. So now I feel even better about stacking the Rays, and he's right-handed, so we're all winners, Doug.
I think this is totally fine. Rarely does a mistake like that, or not a mistake, but rarely does uncertainty like that like mean that you're going to need to like pivot one way or the other. Tillman is like otherworldly bad as well. 6.5 Ks per 9, walking. Five. God, I can't stop laughing. God, he's just stayed in the paternity list. He's like five walks per 9. Hey, go spend some time with your kid, buddy. Like let someone else jump out there. There's no shame in that. I took a paternity leave.
Baltimore got a really forward thinking policy on paternity leave. They were like, yeah, man, just do you. I know normally mothers take more time. Dude, take 5 months. You know, like you're only going to get this time with your little one once.
He's only a kid. He's only a baby one time, buddy. You know, you can leave your 4.5 innings per game and your 5 walk rate just right there with you, and we'll try some other arms out. Anyway,
well,
congratulations to Tim. Congratulations to Tillman. What's that?
One crazy thing about this confusion as well, Odds Shark, which is where I was just looking for odds for today, mm-hmm. They actually have Bundy listed, but then have Tillman's ERA and record. So, like, there's, for some reason, they must, like, pull one from one feed and one from another. But anyway, it's just funny because
and in the end,
normally there isn't that much confusion around who's pitching for a team. So.
And then their line's not going to shift from one guy to another anyway, so it doesn't matter. It's like, leave it. Just leave it. It doesn't matter. We're all good. No, so anyway, all that being said, if you were confused, we were confused. It's going to probably be Tillman. Doesn't really matter. The Ray stack is still firmly in play here. I'm actually looking at both sides of this Miami and Milwaukee game today. They have an implied total of 10 between them, and it's basically a pick 'em. The ballpark's great. It's Garza versus Volquez. I know Volquez, you know, has had a little bit of success this season. He might have even pitched a no-hitter this season at one point, but he stinks. He's striking out around 8 batters per 9, still walking more than 5 batters per 9. Really, really hard to stick around in the majors if you have a walk rate over 5. Like, you really actually just probably shouldn't be there. Like, just allowing too many batters. He's getting away a little bit on the BABIP. The ERA, closing in on 5. I really just like both sides of this. I like the Miami side, the top of that order with Gordon and Stanton. I'm not really so worried about the reverse splits on Stanton. Even like Justin Bour coming like a little bit cheaper. And then Milwaukee changed their lineup a little bit last night. Like they had been hitting Sogard in the leadoff spot, and now VR hit leadoff last night and hit 2 home runs. Now, I don't know if managers, I'm sure they don't want to care about stuff like that, and I'm also equally sure that they do care about it. So, like, it'd be really hard for me to believe that after that game last night, whether he should be hitting in the leadoff spot or not, that he wouldn't be hitting leadoff again tonight. So, they are at the top of there. They have Braun back, Shaw in the middle of the lineup. Thames. He's really struggling right now. Like, he came out of the gate real hot, and this is a kind of a tough guy to project, right? Because he spent a lot of time just overseas playing and was great, obviously, playing in Asia. But he came out of the gate real hot. He's really had a hard time over the last month, where I believe his, like, he hasn't hit a home run in weeks, I don't think. So I get that there would be some worry there, and I'm not sure we have a long enough track record to, like, completely fall back and to know that it's going to turn itself around. Like, I usually caution people to say, look, we can kind of get back. We can factor in age a little bit, but we can kind of get back to where a guy's been for his career, for the most part, on players. on a guy like him, it's not exactly the same. I'm still pretty bullish on him just because he's hitting in the middle of the lineup and he's just in a good spot anyway, coming cheap. How much does it worry you, like slumps like that from a guy we don't know a ton about?
It certainly worries me. I think the price continues to move down quickly enough that I worry less. Like the fact that he's 2,900, I think maybe like projection systems aren't going to know what to do with him and what an appropriate baseline for Thames is right now. But given that he's under 3,000 and people were happily playing 4,000 for him half a month ago, I just don't know that I can jump the gun too quickly on jumping ship there. So like, I think he would be a reasonable play even with a considerably worse projection on these prices, I guess is my point. So I'm still going to happily play him and not worry too much about it.
I should have mentioned Yelich, too, from the Marlins, too. I could basically just like the entire top of the order in that game. Ballpark really helps them. So we have the Rays. We have both sides of that Marlins-Brewers game. Any other team you like before we get out of here?
Sure. Yeah, there's a couple, actually. The first one is the team that everyone's going to love to hear come back up to the top of this list, Doug. Do you know who that is?
I mean, you have to be saying the Blue Jays, right?
They're going to be pumped to see our Blue Jays. Yeah, the Blue Jays. They're going to come back to the top of the list tonight because they're facing Doug Fister. And, you know, Vegas really likes their implied total. And by the way, if you think Vegas is crazy about this, there's a great way to just make a ton of money without having to bother playing DFS. Just go bet against them. Because if you really think Vegas is going to be wrong this consistently on a team like the Blue Jays, then you should have a career in sports betting. Because to hear most people say it, like their implied total over 5 tonight is so drastically off that they're going to score like 3 runs. And it's going to be hard to find an edge like that in DFS. So if you want to go get a really, really huge edge, go bet against the Blue Jays. If you trust it a little bit more and you trust that these guys' baseline projections are sound, which I do, then you want to consider playing him against Doug Fister. Because the thing about Fister is he's kind of that perfect guy, especially for big tournaments, to stack against. Because he doesn't really do anything other than throw strikes. And he throws strikes, which means you can hit his strikes a very, very long way. He's actually given up some of his control. And he's just a career sub-6 K per 9 guy. And at his age 33 season, I don't see that rising anytime soon. So I just think that it's a dream spot to take guys, you know, especially ones that maybe struggle a little bit with the strikeout, plug them in. You know, a guy like Donaldson, who's normally a platoon guy, this is actually a perfect righty to play him against, because while Donaldson does prefer the face lefties, Fister just doesn't strike anyone out. So that extra second of deception doesn't really make any difference. So yeah, I'm all in on the Blue Jays. Happily play him, play them all in cash games, and I will expect nothing but the very best from them tonight.
Their price continues to drop because they have been struggling as a team over the short term. So that's bad.
The beginning of the season too.
Yes. I'm not as bullish on them like tonight that as I was last night. I know it didn't work out. Like I'd rather face them against Ubaldo, and I do think there's a couple of other teams. So I don't think they're not a team that like last night. I was just happy to play Donaldson like 100% in cash games because I thought he was a great play.
It's a worse spot than it was last night, and last night didn't work out. So I definitely get people's hesitation there.
Yeah, but like still like Russell Martin, if he's still hitting second, that's just a fantastic value for the catcher spot. Yeah. That's usually hard to find anyone like worth anything. So if he was hitting there, I would have no problem running him out in cash games. Still like Bautista, still like Donaldson for sure. The run line did come down a little bit on that off of open. So it opened in like the mid fives opened in the high fives and is down to 5.5. I do think you're going to see people play the Rangers tonight against Mike Pelfrey. Pelfrey has been just running. I mean, we've played guys against him every single time that he's pitched this year. He's been an absolute run hot all-star this season, where he's somehow getting away with a mid or 3.7 ERA on the back of a 5.26 xFIP because, again, he's not good either. Like, he can't strike anybody out. Strikes out less than 6 per 9, walking close to the 4. He's just getting away with BABIP and left on base right now. Like, it's the 250 BABIP. 65 points lower than his career average. He's just a lucky pitcher. Rangers are in a good spot. U.S. Cellular is a hitter's park. They're slight favorites. They don't have as many implied runs as some of these other teams we mentioned before, but 5 is just totally fine for a team. And I'm actually wondering sometimes if like these things get driven down a little bit because Pelfrey has been like a little lucky this season. And so it just, I don't know, the ERA just still creeps into people's minds where it really shouldn't. But I do like the Rangers here. I do think they'll be somewhat popular play because I had seen people even posting on Twitter last night about like being excited about Mike Pelfrey Day coming up. So I don't think the ERA has crept into everyone's minds about how real it is. I think people still understand that he's just not a very good pitcher. So the top of that lineup, very, very firmly in play.
And by the way,
one other team before.
The White Sox, they're facing someone called Austin Bybens-Dirks. Austin Bybens-Dirks
I love that name.
Dirks is pitching He's pitched 36 innings in the major leagues, and he's 32 years old. So that's most of what I need to know. Just saying, major league hitters will be hitting against Austin Bybens-Dirks today, and that seems like a good spot, sight unseen. So the only article written about him on Fangraphs was his 2011 Venezuela Winter League pitching stats, where he was running pretty good at that time. But I'm just saying, I'm curious. I'm curious to know what a major league team can do against this guy when he goes out of the
moment. You always want to fall back on those 2011 Venezuela numbers. All right, we're from DFSR.com/MLB. We'll get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that, includes optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. And we cover all sports under the same subscription package. So you sign up now and you keep going with us. You'll have football and basketball and really everything that we offer. So DFSR.com/MLB. And you are all set to go. Buddy, enjoy your full Friday of baseball. I'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, man. Talk to you then.